Welcome to your interactive audio lecture for week 4, Style and Tone, Choosing Words Effectively. Last week, we learned about the importance of analyzing our audience. In this lecture, we'll explore how the words you choose can make a big difference. We'll also analyze some popular blogs, which might help you to do your mentor text analysis for your blog proposal. And we'll learn some quick sentence level fixes for stronger writing. At the end, you'll be invited to apply these learnings to your blog. So, to be effective in this lecture, you'll need to pick a blog to study. So this should be a blog that is hopefully fairly popular, so that you can learn from that blogger's success. And it helps to find a blog that is similar to the type of blog you want to create. So if you want to create a celebrity gossip blog, maybe you would go with Leaning Gossip. If you are interested in a marketing blog, maybe you would go with Alista Part. But take a minute to find a blog that is similar to the type that you're interested in making. You might want to pause here while you do. So last lecture, we talked about thinking about your audience. And this is a section where audience analysis is again really important. Every decision you make about your word choices will come from your audience's needs. You might consider, how well does your audience understand your topic? If your audience has a lot of expertise, they may expect you to use specialized language, but this may be confusing to non-expert readers. Why is your audience reading your work? Do you want to entertain them, inform them, persuade them, or all three? A blog that's just meant to entertain might have a chatty or funny voice. A blog that's trying to persuade you to invest in their stock picks would likely use a more serious tone. What is your audience expecting? How will your audience use your work? Will they skim it? Read it carefully? For example, if you are creating a recipe blog, you might have to think about your audience having a phone or a laptop propped up while they're cooking. Maybe they have messy hands. So how is your audience actually going to engage with your work? How can you make your writing accessible to your audience? Thinking about accessibility for disabled and neurodiverse people makes your writing stronger. So let's do an activity. Look at the blog that you've selected. Skim the first post and write down the first 5 words that catch your attention. These don't have to be the first 5 words in the post, but just 5 that stand out to you. For example, I clicked on the first post of LaneyGossip.com and learned the words dump, fainter, acrimonious, and nuclear. Now, let's take a look at the words. What can you tell about the blog based on the word choice? I noticed that the mix of big words like acrimonious with more visceral words like dump means that the blog is probably trying to do more analysis than your average gossip magazine, but it's still trying to be entertaining. So you might want to pause here to take a minute to pick out 5 words that catch your attention and then reflect on what that tells us about the blog. Each word impacts a piece's tone. This is because words have meanings beyond their dictionary definitions, which are called connotations. For example, the word thrifty has a positive connotation, whereas the word cheap has a negative one, even though they mean the same thing. The word picky has a negative connotation, while the word selective has a positive one. In the workplace communication, we usually intentionally select words that will leave a positive impression with the reader, unless we're breaking bad news. This is called positive emphasis. When you practice positive emphasis, you focus on seeing things from the reader's perspective and emphasizing the benefits to the reader. Your readings will talk more about this. Writing voice. Have you ever had the experience of reading a friend's writing and being able to hear them? Every one of us has our own unique writing voice that makes us unique. As your readings explain, your voice includes the words you choose, the rhythm of your sentences. So some people like long, rambling sentences, some like short, measured ones. The cadence of your writing. Good writing has a rhythm, just like music. Try to read a sentence or two from your favorite book out loud. You'll probably feel that it flows well. Your unique expressions or mannerisms. Sometimes people who are new to business communication try to put on a business voice, but that often gets wordy or vague. It's best to stay true to your own writing voice, but simply edit it so that it fits a new context. Here's our next activity. Read a few paragraphs of the blog, paying attention to the writer's voice. How would you describe the voice? How does the writer achieve this voice? For example, I noticed in Laney Gossip blog that the writing is kind of snarky, but it also has a lot of analysis. It feels like you're listening to someone who's a really smart gossip with you. I think the writer achieves his voice by using sentence fragments to make it sound more like real speech, and by being very intentional with her word choice. So take a moment to reflect on the blog, paying attention to the writer's voice, and asking yourself, how would you describe the voice, and how does the writer achieve this voice? And you might want to pause here. Let's take a look at some weak writing habits that hold your voice back. For this lecture, you can stick with analyzing your chosen blog, or you can examine some of your own writing. The habits that we'll be exploring are wordiness, filler phrases, run-on sentences or sentence fragments, repeating sentence patterns, jargon or cliches, vague language, and passive voice. And it's worth noting that these type of edits are not the thing that you're going to want to do when you're drafting. So when you're drafting, you want to trust your voice, just get the words down on the paper. But once you're editing, this is when you can come back in and make those tweaks that will make a big difference. Let's start with wordiness. If you're used to writing to word counts, you might have picked up a wordiness habit. Sometimes we need long sentences to convey meaning, but wordiness happens when several words are doing the same job without adding any new information. For example, listen to this sentence and see if you can make it more concise. I would like to inform you that due to an unforeseen and surprising incident involving delayed pickup that occurred, the shipment you ordered will unfortunately be delayed and not available for pickup. So what's the author trying to say here? Basically, your order will be late, or your order will be late because of postal delays. So something that's pretty simple. So here the words, I would like to inform you that, are unnecessary. They don't give the reader any new information. The next part, due to unforeseen and surprising incident involving delayed pickup that occurred, that uses 12 words to convey because of postal delays. These words are also unnecessarily vague. They don't tell us what actually happened. The last text, that your order will be unfortunately waylaid and not available for pickup, is also using 15 words to say your order will be late. So note that the most important information is at the back of the sentence, and the most important information is that the order will not be available for pickup. Moving important information to the front of the sentence nearly always improves the sentence. So when you revise, look for multiple words doing the work that just one word could do. Or look for sentences where important information is at the back of the sentence. The next one is filler phrases. Before you hand in your document, do a search for filler words like there is, there are, there was. These are the written version of and are a sign that your sentence needs revising. You can usually remove them. And if you're really paying attention, you might note that I used these are in that sentence structure alone. So you can see how tricky they are to avoid. Funneling phrases. Sometimes when you're trying to figure out what you want to say, you write your way into a sentence with something like, I think that, or according to me. You can usually remove these. Words like basically, absolutely, or always, because if something's obvious, you don't have to state it. The word very. Occasionally, you'll need adjectives for emphasis, but often they're unnecessary, or it's a sign that your words could be replaced with something more specific. For example, instead of saying, I'm very happy to inform you, you could say, I'm thrilled to inform you. Run-on sentences or sentence fragments. So to think about this, we'll need to know a little bit about independent and dependent clauses. So an independent clause is something that has a subject, a verb, and is a complete thought. So for example, in the sentence, Arlie kicks the ball. Arlie is the subject. Kicks is what the subject is doing. The ball is the object. It's a complete thought. So a run-on sentence is when two independent clauses are smashed together without a period or semicolon in between. For example, Arlie kicked the ball, she likes soccer. So we have two independent clauses. Arlie kicked the ball, she likes soccer. To fix it, correct the punctuation or make one clause dependent. So you could say Arlie kicked the ball, period, she likes soccer, or Arlie kicked the ball because she likes soccer. A sentence fragment is the opposite. That is when a clause is lacking a subject, verb, or isn't a complete thought, but it's treated like it's independent. So, for example, if I had the phrase, because she likes soccer, this is a subject and a verb, but it isn't a complete thought because it needs more information to make the because make sense. Because what? So to fix it, attach it to an independent clause or make it independent. So, Arlie kicked the ball because she likes soccer. Repeating sentence patterns. Everyone has a favorite sentence pattern, but repeating them too much can lead to clunky prose. For example, Arlie kicks the ball. She likes soccer. Soccer is fun. Soccer is good exercise. We all play soccer. You can see how clunky that sounds. If you've noticed that you've used the same pattern over and over, consider revising the paragraph to vary the sentence patterns. So, for example, Arlie kicks a ball because she likes soccer. Since 2011, she's been practicing her soccer skills. Now it's time to get in the game. This is called modulation. Jargon or cliches. Workplaces are full of jargon or garbage language. Unless you've been told to use particular terminology, your writing will be easier to understand without jargon. An example of jargon would be leaning in or having some synergy. It's a kind of business speak. Plain language is especially important if you're communicating interculturally, since a lot of jargon doesn't make sense to people from other cultures. One way to tell if a phrase is a cliche or jargon is to ask whether using it makes your writing easier for more people to understand. Often, jargon is used to conceal and make ideas seem more complex than they are. Using concrete, specific phrases will help your ideas shine through. Vague language. To make your writing clearer and easier to understand, focus on the verbs. If you find a verb that you can't visualize, replace it with something more concrete and specific. For example, which sentence can you visualize? She went to the store, or she walked to the store. We participated in the fun run, or we panted and puffed our way through 5K for the fun run. Passive voice. In active voice, the subject of the sentence is the one who performs the action. In passive voice, the object is the focus. For example, active, Arlie kicked the ball. Passive, the ball was kicked by Arlie. And again, if you want to test this, underline the verb and then see who is doing that verb. So, who is doing the kicking? If the sentence is active, the person who is doing the kicking will be the focus or be at the front. The other tip that we can look is to look for that was, so was kicked. That's often a sign that we have passive voice going on. Occasionally, we'll need passive voice because sometimes we want to focus on the object. Usually, however, passive voice leads to weaker verbs, wordiness, and more grammar mistakes. Passive voice is also slippery because companies use it to avoid taking responsibility. In phrases like mistakes were made or the computer was broken, there's no human present, no one to make the mistake or break the computer. Passive voice is political. As you can see from these headlines and tweets that I'll read out in just a moment, passive voice is often a political choice. In some headlines, for example, the person who did the action is emphasized. In others, the person who did the action is hidden. For example, in this tweet that I'll read, the protester actions are in active voice and the police actions are in passive voice. This tweet comes from the New York Times. Minneapolis, a photographer was shot in the eye. Washington, D.C., protesters struck a journalist with his own microphone. Louisville, a reporter was hit by a pepper ball on live television by an officer who appeared to be aiming at her. So, in these three examples, in the sentence, a photographer was shot in the eye, the subject has been removed, so we don't know who shot the photographer in the eye. Whereas in the Washington, D.C. example, protesters struck a journalist with his own microphone. This is an example of active voice, so we know who did the striking. So you can see how using passive voice or active voice can conceal information, and so it can often be used for political reasons. Let's see if you can identify other uses of passive voice in these headlines and tweets. Man shot dead at 26th and Broadway identified. So why is that passive voice? And again, we can go to the verb. Who did the shooting? If it's not included, it's probably passive voice. Truck driver drives into protesters on Minneapolis Highway. This is a slippery one because instead it makes it sound as if the truck has somehow come to life, when in reality there was a driver, a person behind it. So let's do another activity. Using either the blog that you're studying or a piece of your own work, see if you can find some of the principles that we just discussed, such as wordiness, filler phrases, vague language, passive voice, sentence fragments, run-on sentences, or jargon. You might want to take the time to pause here. So see if you can underline these principles if you can find them. See if you can find at least three or four. Reflecting on what you learned. In this lesson, we focus on writing at a sentence level. Take a moment to reflect on the voice of your blog and come up with five things you'd like to do to meet your audience's needs on a sentence level. So five things that you'll need to do to really engage your audience. For example, I chose use clear specific language, revise my work to avoid there is, there are, mix in shorter sentences with longer ones, read my writing out loud to hear how it sounds, read my other blog posts before I start to maintain a consistent voice. So you might come up with something different. However, having these five things that you want to focus on is something great that you can keep in hand when you're revising your blog. So it becomes a checklist that you can use to make sure that your writing is as strong as it can be. So thank you for listening to week four. I look forward to week five when we'll continue our discussion focusing on storytelling.